You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, broadcasting on commercial radio stations from coast to coast on Sirius XM all across the North American continent, on Pacifica stations across America, Europe, and Africa, on American Forces Radio on every U.S. military base in the world, and simulcast as television on both Dish Network, DirecTV, and cable systems nationwide. More people watch or listen to the Tom Hartman Program on more stations and outlets than any other progressive talk show in the world. Welcome to our program. A lot going on. Mitt Romney bronzing, we're going to get into that may seem like a marginal thing or maybe not. Tax breaks for the rich. We some amazing new information on that I'm going to share with you. Rand Paul wanting to talk about what capitalism is. He has a very interesting definition. Paul Ryan heading back to Washington, D.C. But I think one of the most important things that's happened right now is what Senator Bernie Sanders helped pull off. Senator Sanders, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Tom. Good to be with you.
Great to have you with us. Tell us about this block of 29 senators and what you guys are up to.
Well, I just had a press conference with Senators Whitehouse, Franken, and Begich, and we released a letter with 29 signatures on it, which basically says, do not cut Social Security. This country does have a deficit problem, but Social Security has not contributed one nickel to that deficit, because it is funded by the payroll tax, not the general treasury. And in fact, Social Security has a $2.7 trillion surplus, can pay out every benefit owed to every eligible American for the next 21 years. And if some of the schemes for cutting Social Security get implemented, it will mean not just that seniors get cuts in Social Security, but disabled veterans as well. So bottom line here, Tom, is there is a real and growing effort on the part of Wall Street, virtually all Republicans and some Democrats, I should say, to cut Social Security in the name of deficit reduction. Those cuts will be devastating to a lot of struggling seniors and to folks who are disabled veterans who put their lives on the line for this country. And we have got to rally and do everything that we can to say, yeah, we're going to deal with deficit reduction, but not on the backs of some of the most vulnerable people in this country. There are fair ways to do deficit reduction when the rich are becoming much richer and their effective tax rates are the lowest in decades. They've got to pay more in taxes. When a quarter of American corporations are paying zero in taxes, they have got to start paying taxes. When we are losing about $100 billion a year because of tax havens that exist in the Cayman Islands and Bermuda, and all these wealthy guys and corporations are stashing their money there to avoid paying taxes, we've got to deal with that issue. When you have a military budget today where we're spending almost as much as the entire rest of the world combined, got to take a hard look at military spending. There is, in fact, waste in government in various areas. There are ways to do deficit reduction without beating up unnecessarily and unfairly on seniors, on disabled vets, on the widows and orphans.
And it seems, Senator Sanders, that one of the really great things about this block of 29 senators, you've got the Senate leadership in this.
Well, Harry Reid has been very, very strong on it. Chuck Schumer has been strong on it. And so has Patty Murray. So we have most of, but not all of, the Democratic leadership. But here's what I fear, that A, the American people are not aware of what's going on and the attacks on Social Security. And B, after the election, you're going to have meetings led by CEOs of large corporations who are going to be telling members of the House and Senate how they should go about dealing with the deficit. And those ways will not be fair. And it's not just cutting Social Security. It'll be cuts in Medicare and Medicaid. Not as devastating, of course, as what the Romney and Ryan people want to do. But they will be painful nonetheless. So our job now is to focus on this issue. We got deficit reduction. It is real. How did we get to where we are today? Well, you got to where we are not because of Social Security. Social Security, as I said, has a $2.7 trillion surplus. We got to where we are in terms of the deficit is that when Bill Clinton left office, you'll remember in 2001, we had a $236 billion surplus.
Yeah.
So we are where we are today because of two wars that Bush and the other quote-unquote deficit hawks got us into and didn't pay for. Didn't pay for the wars, didn't pay for the tax breaks, didn't pay for the Medicare Part D program. That's how we got to where we are. And given that reality, it would be just very cruel and unfair to move toward balancing the budget on the backs of seniors and disabled vets.
Senator Sanders, last question. What can people who support what you and these 28 other senators are saying in this message that you're clearly conveying to the American people and to Congress, what can people do who support this?
By the way, Tom, the overwhelming majority of the American people support this.
Yes.
Poll after poll after poll shows that even among conservatives, people do not believe that we should cut Social Security or that Social Security has anything to do with the deficit.
Yep.
So the answer is the American people who believe that, who are the vast majority, have got to rally. They've got to get on the phone right now and, in a one-sentence statement, tell their members of the House and the Senate, do not cut Social Security. It has nothing to do with the deficit. Mm-hmm. Simple as all that.
Yep. And callcongress.org, by the way, is a website that we put up that has several toll-free numbers as well as the regular number to the switchboard at the United States House and Senate. And you can simply, if you don't even know the name of your member of Congress, you can tell them where you live and they will look it up.
That's great. And that's exactly what we need. We need emails. We need to wake the American people up on this issue, because if they are asleep, I can assure you that our Wall Street friends and the other big money interests will move aggressively to a deficit reduction on the backs of people in this country who are already hurting, rather than asking the wealthiest people in this country who are doing phenomenally well and large corporations who are making record-breaking profits to stop paying their fair share of taxes. So it's a huge, huge issue. I think you're going to see it surface the day after the election, no matter who wins the presidency. And we have got to be aggressive in saying, do not balance the budget on the backs of people who are already hurting.
Wouldn't it be accurate to say, Senator Sanders, that by cutting Social Security, they're not doing anything about the budget, the budget deficit or the debt anyway?
Right.
That what they're really doing is they're taking us down the road to handing Social Security off to the billionaires on Wall Street.
That's
that's what
right.
Pete Peterson is all about, and he's funding half this stuff.
That's exactly a good half of that stuff. Pete Peterson, in case listeners don't know, is a Wall Street billionaire who is putting a huge amount of money into, exactly as Tom indicated, seeing that Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid are cut. And I think, Tom, your point is well taken. And that's what makes this debate so absurd. If somebody were to come up and say, okay, look, Social Security today can pay out benefits for the next 21 years, fine, but we want it to be stronger than that. How do we do that? Let's have that debate. I have legislation in, which, by the way, picked up on a proposal Obama made in the last campaign. And I should tell you that one of the concerns and fears that I have is that Obama is not talking about this issue, which makes me very nervous.
Mm.
4 years ago when he was running, he said, John McCain wants to cut your Social Security. I don't. I won't. And, in fact, he came up with a very sensible proposal to lift the cap on taxable income, to do away with the absurdity that a billionaire is contributing the same amount into the Social Security Trust Fund today as somebody making $110,000.
Yeah.
And Obama said, that's wrong. Let's lift the cap. Let's start at $250,000, and that can fund Social Security for the next 75 years. Obama was right then. I introduced legislation to do just what Obama was talking about. But here's what makes me nervous, and the American people got to get up and involved in this. Obama is not talking about that issue today.
So we've
got to put pressure on Democrats as well as Republicans. So let's rally the American people around this issue, Tom.
Right. And even call the White House comment line.
Absolutely.
And then you go to barackobama.com. You can send them emails and comments.
Simple words. Do not cut Social Security.
There you go. Senator Bernie, which is a guarantee for everybody, literally from birth to death. Senator Bernie Sanders. Thank you, Senator Sanders.
Take care. Bye-bye.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
16 minutes past the hour. We'll be back with... Did Mitt Romney really bronze himself for the Hispanic audience? Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. I came across this absolutely fascinating press release from the Madison, Wisconsin Police Union. And Brian Austin is on the line. He is a detective with the Madison, Wisconsin Police Department. and a board member with the Madison Professional Police Officers Association, the MPPOA, MPPOAinfo.com is the website for the police officers. Basically, it's a union, right, Mr. Austin?
Yes, yeah, it's the police union that represents the rank and file of the City of Madison Police Department.
Or I guess the proper way to address you would be Detective Austin, is that correct?
Brian's fine, too.
Okay, Brian works, too. I read in this press release, if I may quote to you, the right to free speech and the right to peaceably assemble are two of the fundamental rights upon which our democracy is based. We believe the recent enforcement action at the Capitol, that would be in Madison, Wisconsin, clearly violates these rights in a way that should be unacceptable in a free society. Those are strong words. Can you tell me what you're talking about?
Sure. Well, we're talking about a recent change in policy at the State Capitol building in terms of enforcement of what they're calling administrative code rules, but basically enforcement and citations being written for people coming to the Capitol to protest in various ways. Just a little backstory for you, Tom. As you recall, we had tens of thousands of people at our State Capitol last year. People from all walks of life. At the height, we had 150,000 people at the Capitol on a given day.
Right, and these ranged from lefties to Tea Partiers.
Absolutely. We had all sides of the political spectrum, and it was a really remarkable time in Wisconsin's history because we saw none of the strife or violence between, you know, the police and protesters that you've seen across the country. Mm-hmm. And the reality is everybody got to have their say.
Yeah.
And it worked. And the reason why it worked is because the leadership of the police agencies, and there were many, many police agencies involved, given the number of protesters we had, but the leaders of those agencies made the decision that they were not going to place their officers in a position to violate people's rights, that they were going to provide a safe environment for people to have their voices heard, and that's exactly what happened. Mm-hmm. It's a real proud moment in our state's history.
Yeah.
Fast forward to about 3 weeks ago, and the Department of Administration in our government has basically started cracking down on people and has started writing citations for things like people coming to the Capitol and silently holding up a sign.
Hmm.
And there have been citations written for that the only offense that people have committed is silently holding a sign. They're also beginning to cite people who are participating in what's called the Solidarity Sing-Along. And it's a group that has met every day at noon in the Capitol since the protest began and sings labor and free speech-related songs. And, you know, they do so in a very peaceful way. When there are other groups that need to use the Capitol Rotunda, my understanding is this sing-along group moves outside to be respectful of that. But now they're being cited for not having a permit and for, I guess it's called obstructing the Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
So we've been watching this with kind of growing alarm, my union and the Dane County Deputy Sheriff's Association over the past few weeks. And we felt it was time to make a statement about what we felt was going on.
Well, it's a very clear and unambiguous statement. And I think one that the founders of this country would be very proud of. Are you having any success with this, or is anybody listening?
Well, people are certainly listening. Our phones have been ringing off the hook, you know, the contacts in the press release. And so people are definitely paying attention. I think it started a very good dialogue. My understanding is, you know, I haven't heard of any policy changes as a result. The chief of the Capitol Police Department issued a response to our statement, but you know, what we want are people to become aware of what's happening. And, you know, the press release wasn't lip service. We truly feel these rights strike to the very core of our existence as Americans and what makes us Americans.
This is the First Amendment.
What separates us from a lot of other nations in this world.
You're absolutely right.
They don't enjoy these freedoms.
Detective Austin is the head of the Capitol Police who changed their policy and started arresting people for exercising their free speech rights. Was this a decision made unilaterally by the head of the Capitol Police and the associated agencies, or are they answering to somebody else? Is there a political component to this, or is there some other bureaucratic or administrative component to this? What's happening?
Well, I mean, let me just say that, you know, I certainly don't have access to the inner workings of the state government at this point, and so can only speculate as to motivations, but I do know that the Capitol Police Chief answers to the Department of Administration, which is a department out of the executive branch of our our government. So,
which answers to Scott Walker.
Yes.
So
I think, and you know, there's a new chief was brought in. And again, I don't know the man personally, so I'm not commenting on motivations or anything like
sure.
that. All I can do is comment on observations that we're seeing in changes of behavior.
Hmm.
And so I think, you know, certainly, what I'm hearing is that marching orders are coming from the DOA. And the irony of all this is that, you know, the protests were really kind of quieting down, becoming smaller and smaller as time passed. I mean, it's
right.
kind of a natural progression of things. And this has really, I think, started to incite, you know, more people coming again. And so I'm not really sure if the, you know, the stated claim was we're just trying to restore order in the Capitol. It was a pretty orderly place.
Mm.
And so I'm not really sure of the motivation.
Yeah, and it might even backfire.
The other component to our release is an acknowledgement of the terrible position this puts the rank-and-file officers of the Capitol Police Department in.
Sure.
And these officers for a year and a half have dealt very admirably with protests and have really done a phenomenal job. And I think they're being put in a position now. Coincidentally, they were one of the few police agencies or groups of police officers in Wisconsin that were not exempt from Act 10, which means they have lost their collective bargaining rights.
Mm-hmm.
So these officers are extremely vulnerable to the whim of their leadership in the Department of Administration and have little recourse to fight back against that. And so I think they're being put in a really, not only a bad position, but a potentially dangerous situation where they're having to provoke confrontations with people that are not necessary.
Wow. Police Detective Brian Austin, mppoainfo.com, the Madison Professional Police Officers Association. Detective Austin, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks for having me on, Tom. I appreciate it.
Much appreciated.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Oh, this is interesting. Scott Walker apparently doesn't want anybody out in front of the Capitol with a sign. My words, not that of the police officer. But I can put two and two together. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 34 minutes past the hour. Fascinating what's going on there. Did any of you see Mitt Romney on Univision? Am I hallucinating? I mean, the pictures are all over the internet, right? You find them on Huffington Post, Democratic Underground, TomHartman.com. They're all over. Here, actually, there's a short video of Mitt Romney on, you know, talking to a Hispanic audience last night. And under this short video, this YouTube video, you know, people who are YouTube members can post comments. And let me just read you a couple of the comments. The title of the video, by the way, is Romney, I Won't Round Up Illegal Immigrants and Deport Them. It's from CBS News Online. It's a minute and 12 seconds. And it's just a little clip of Romney at, you know, Univision. But you get to see him kind of close up with high resolution. And the people commenting, by the gods, he's orange. You're confusing Latinos with Oompa Loompas. Another one. Why is he so blanking tan? Another one. Idiot forgot his eyes. Yeah, he didn't tan underneath his eyes. He didn't darken that. So he looks like a raccoon. Another person. Is this a joke? So he spray tanned himself to show his appeal to Hispanic voters? Wow. And another person wrote, he looks extra crispy. Did you see this? I mean, here's another one. Holy moly, he's orange, borrowing from Boehner? Apparently, Mitt Romney bronzed himself, or he certainly darkened his skin if these photos are... And yeah, at first I thought, oh, it's got to just be the lighting. But if you look at his neck is a full, you know, two or three shades lighter than his chin. And under his eyes, apparently they didn't spray the makeup on underneath his eyes or the bronzer or the tan or whatever. I haven't seen a picture of him today. I don't know if, you know, if it was like John Boehner, you know, with the spray on bronze stuff. I think that stuff lasts for, a few weeks. you know, slowly washes off when you take showers and things? At least that's my understanding of how it works. I've never done this, so I have no first-person experience. So, you know, did Romney bronze himself yesterday to talk to the Latinos, or did he ask the makeup artist to simply darken him? Or did he do it himself and not do a very good job? Is this his idea of bonding with people who have slightly darker skin? It's bizarre. It's just bizarre. So if you saw that, you know, and you can make any sense out of it. I have a theory I want to share with you about why Mitt Romney is all over the map. And, you know, this may just sound like total wackadoodle stuff, or it may be right on, hitting the nail right on the head. And I would love to get your thoughts on this as well, particularly if you're a Mormon. There is a Mormon prophecy that is attributed to Joseph Smith, the founder of Mormonism, that a day will come when the Constitution is hanging by a thread and a Mormon elder will step forward and save the nation. It's called the White Horse Prophecy. You can Google it. There's a whole website on it, Wikipedia, you know, whatever. There's all kinds of stuff on it. Mitt Romney's father, when he ran for president, George Romney, according to the Salt Lake Tribune, George was asked about the White Horse Prophecy. And he said, and I quote, this is Mitt's dad when he was running for president. I have always felt that they meant that sometime the question of whether we were going to proceed on the basis of the Constitution would arise, and at this point government leaders who were Mormons would be involved in answering that question. End of quote. Now, Mitt's mom had three kids and was told by her doctor she could not have any more children. And miraculously, a fourth was born, which was Mitt. And so he literally was raised being told that he was a miracle. She referred to him throughout his life as her miracle baby. So here's this young man who is told that divinity brought him into the world. When he is ordained as a teenager in the Mormon church, he is told that, you know, it's his work to do great things and change the world for the better. And his father, he's working on his father's campaign, and his father is talking about the White Horse Prophecy and how the Constitution is hanging by thread. Now, Joseph Smith tried this. And here's where it gets really interesting. One of Romney's chief guys, his campaign manager, Matt Rhodes, was talking to Mike Allen of Politico. And Mike Allen writes in Politico, well, actually, let me give you a little backstory. When Joseph Smith was alive in 1844, the Constitution was hanging by a thread. We were on the edge of the Civil War. The North and the South were having horrible fights. There's a big battle about whether Texas should be annexed as a slave state, whether Oregon should be taken in as part of the Union, whether or not it should be a slave state. This was, you know, just a decade after the whole, Missouri Compromise and all this stuff. I mean, it was a time that of real constitutional crisis. And Joseph Smith decided to step up and fulfill the White Horse Prophecy himself. And he ran for president of the United States in the election of 1844 against a Whig and a Democrat. The Democrat won. His name was James Polk. And what Polk is famous for is the line, Manifest Destiny. Polk said out loud that Texas was part of the United States and Oregon was part of the United States because it was divine providence. It was manifest destiny. It was God's will. And Polk started the Mexican-American War because it was God's will, which really upset Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln trashed Polk for this as a candidate for the Senate in the state of Illinois, and that in many ways led to Abraham Lincoln's political career, him going after Polk. But Polk was the guy who, Joseph Smith ran against, but then Joseph Smith was murdered in June of 1844. The election was in November. So he never got, he ran, but he didn't live long enough to actually run. And Polk had this whole manifest destiny thing. So the head politicos, Mike Allen, asks Matt Rhodes, the guy running the Romney campaign, you know, what do you think about this White Horse prophecy? Is Romney trying to fulfill it? And here's a quote from the article. When I asked Rhodes what Romney might do with the budget and entitled reform plans Ryan had already outlined, Rhodes' eyes lit up. He gave me a name, James Polk. Rhodes and the rest of the members of Romney's inner circle think a Romney presidency could look much like the White House tenure of the 11th U.S. president. Now, why would Romney say, or why would Romney's chief advisor, the guy running his campaign, say, you know, a Romney administration is going to be like the James Polk administration? Well, that was at a time when the Constitution was hanging by a thread. It was the early days that led up to the Civil War. Polk talked about manifest destiny. And if you could have, if you could reboot the Polk presidency only with a Mormon in the White House, as Joseph Smith tried to do when he ran for president in 1844, you would fulfill the White Horse Mormon prophecy. And here's the campaign, the director of Romney's campaign saying this. Glenn Beck, a fellow Mormon, had Senator Orrin Hatch, a fellow Mormon, on his radio show back in 2008. He said, Senator, do you believe, I mean, when I heard Barack Obama talk about the Constitution, I thought we are at the point, or we are very near the point, where our Constitution is hanging by a thread. Now, that's a phrase any Mormon who knows about the White Horse prophecy immediately knows that you're talking about, you know, okay, a Mormon president is going to save America. And what did Orrin Hatch say? You got that right. Quote, end quote. Our Constitution is hanging by a thread. So could it be that the reason, you know, if you think that of it in this terms, I think, frankly, this explains everything. The reason why Romney has no plans that he will publicly issue. I don't think he has any plans. The reason why he told the people in that room, you know, well, the Middle East, we'll just have to kind of blunder through it and we'll see what happens. The reason why he's not laid out any serious policy stuff is because I'm increasingly believing, maybe I'm crazy, that Romney thinks that he's divinely inspired. He thinks he is fulfilling divine intent by becoming president, and that he doesn't have to know what he's going to do, because once he becomes president, he will be guided by divinity, by divine inspiration. And therefore, it doesn't matter what his policies are. And in fact, I believe that he thinks he's been guided by divine intent his entire life, because everything's always worked out for him. Two and two hasn't added up in him, that, you know, it might have to do with the fact that his father was a multimillionaire and the governor and the head of AMC and all these things. You know, he hasn't gotten that. He was told by his mother that he was this divine being. And I think he believes it himself. And I think, frankly, his wife Anne believes it. Tell me I'm crazy. Tell me I'm right. And tell me if you saw him last night on Univision where he browned himself, really?
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll pick up your calls right after this. Stick around.
Don't ride the white horse if you want to ride.
Right. Okay, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Lisa, Lansing, Michigan, listening on Sirius Satellite Radio. Lisa, you saw Romney on Univision?
Well, I saw a clip, and I guess I didn't even notice the tan, and I think he's just desperate to make a new image, so maybe somebody told him it'd make him look younger or more youthful. But what I thought I heard, and I haven't been able to verify it anywhere, is I thought he was talking up Romney Care.
Yes.
And made the comment that he had to be against it during the primary. And I'm just sitting here thinking, you got to be kidding me. I couldn't believe my ears. And now, I mean, it just cements anybody of thinking of him as being a liar. And the other shocking news that I heard today, and you could take this both ways, is Tim Pawlenty was his co-chair.
Right.
And 45 days before to quit the campaign, either he's part of the shakeup or he thinks Romney isn't going to get in because he was pretty much guaranteed a cabinet position in Romney's administration.
Yeah, so Pawlenty just left to go with an association of banksters. And
he's going to make millions, but he's only doing that because I think if his aspirations to be president and he thought Romney was going to make it.
I think it's entirely possible that we're
cabinet member.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. And I think it's entirely possible that we are looking at a Barry Goldwater year. You know, I've been thinking up until the last week or so, I've been thinking that we're looking at a George W. Bush year where, in 2000, George Bush didn't win the popular vote, didn't actually even win Florida when they actually recounted the state. But, the Supreme Court gave him the White House. He basically stole the White House, but he was close enough that it was stealable. And up until the last week or so, I've been thinking, they probably suppressed 3 or 4 million people, voters, in the 2008 election. They're probably going to suppress twice that many, three times that many in this election. And it might be enough to get Romney in. And, like that Republican in Pennsylvania said, okay, voter ID law, voter suppression ID law to help Romney win the presidency. But I'm starting to think
that Romney will win. Romney will absolutely win. You cannot go up against the Rove and Koch machine. You just wait and see what they start shooting out as TV commercials. They don't care about the facts. It scares people into thinking things. And
especially at the last
one. I'm really, really frightened because they'll come out with all of this, he's a terrorist, and all this stuff that they've been trying to do for 4 years, and some of it did start to stick, some of it isn't. I think the best thing that happened was the Democratic campaign, Bill Clinton came out, and obviously sometimes you can't toot your own horn, but somebody else can for you.
Yep.
When people say they're disappointed in Obama and he didn't do anything, it's like, oh my God, don't ask, don't tell. 2/3 of the stimulus was tax cuts, the auto bailout, the Ledbetter Act. I mean, you can just go down, 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 the Pell Grants for students, the housing bail. I mean, you can't say he hasn't been doing anything.
No, he's been very active. Lisa, and you said it very well. Thank you very much for the call. We'll see. I've been very concerned too that at the last minute we're going to see $500 million worth of ads dropped in, and they're going to make charges that there's not enough time to rebut, and they will be lies, or they may be distortions of the truth. The new ad where they've got little clips of Obama, bad distortions of the truth. We'll see. John in Barner, Kansas. Hey, John, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on Dish Network. What's on your mind today?
Well, when you started talking about Romney with the Manifest Destiny,
that
struck me because all the time I've watched, leading up to now, he always seemed like a guy that thought that he should be king, like he was prince and he was going to be king. And
according to his religion, if you reach a certain level in your church, my understanding is that you get your own planet and you become a god. And that this world, this earth that we're living on, was created by a man who became a god. And that, man became god. And that all of us have the potential to become gods. And if you hit a certain level in the church, you even get your own planet. So. He's just kind of working up the chain here. The president in life, and then a god one in the afterlife. Could it be? Yeah. I think it's entirely possible. Entirely possible that he sincerely believes it. That I'm not saying this to ridicule him or to put down Mormonism. I think that there's a possibility, and I think probably other presidents of the United States have been. Maybe Jimmy Carter felt that he was divinely inspired, although. I think that Carter was more praying, please guide me rather than, thinking I'm the guy that God's guiding. Other way. There is a very important distinction there. But Romney does at times seem like he's so anyhow, thanks a lot, John, for your comment. I appreciate it. Les in Lancaster, California. Hey, Les, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. A quick one. We've got a minute or so here to the end of the hour.
Okay, real quick, ex-Mormon. And I was raised in the church. All my family is still members. And White Horse Prophecy is pounded into you from the time you start the primary to the to the Aaronic priesthood right on up. I mean, that's one of the main tenets of the whole religion. I mean, that's just pounded into you. And every person that goes to the Mormon church actually believes it, so...
Well, anyway. It's not, you know, officially it's not doctrine. It's just, it's something that Joseph Smith might have said.
It's pretty much doctrine.
Yeah, but your experience growing up in the church is that. So do you think it's possible that Mitt Romney is the white horse? See, do you think it's possible that Mitt Romney is the white horse?
I don't know. I mean, I don't. I believe a lot.
Do you think it's possible that he thinks he's the white horse?
Oh, I would probably say so. A lot of the other members in the church believe that.
Huh. Wow.
I mean, a lot of. I mean, you know, you go to Utah. I spend time in Utah because I got a lot of family there still, and most of Utah believes it.
Wow. Okay, Les, thanks a lot for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV. Watching our program there on Free Speech TV. By the way, The Big Picture, our evening TV program, is now available in HD on Hulu.com/TheBigPicture. Check that out. We will be back. Yvette Sanchez Fuentes is going to be with us. We're going to talk about Head Start for a moment. And I got a geeky science and more Romneyisms.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Yvette Sanchez Fuentes is on the line with us, the National Director of the Office of Head Start, Administration for Children and Families Division of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, appointed by President Obama in 2009. And Director Fuentes, am I saying that right?
Yeah, you can just call me Yvette, though.
Okay.
Yvette. Hi, Tom.
Hi, thanks for joining us today. Head Start is an extraordinary program. When I was young, you could actually volunteer. When I was a teenager, you could volunteer to help out in Head Start programs. And I did for a few months one summer, I remember. Not sure how old I was. It must have been around 14, 15, something like that. One of my brothers was in that Head Start program.
Yeah. And, you know, we still have hundreds of volunteers across the country, folks who come in just from their local communities and volunteer in their Head Start programs. You know, I think every time I travel, I meet somebody who has a story about how they volunteered in a Head Start program, similar to yours. And my mom made me go do something for the summer.
Well,
so I went to the Head Start program.
I confess it was because I had three younger brothers, and I think it was my youngest or the second of the youngest was in that program. My mother was, you know, hassling me about
doing something, right?
You know, yeah, so there I was. But you try to take credit for it, but I have to give my mom the credit. What can I say? But in any case, I see Head Start. You know, I've seen the statistics. You invest a dollar in Head Start, you get, what is it, $9 back or something like that over the lifetime of the person in terms of increased tax revenue because they make more money because they have a better future?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that we've seen lots of different data that takes it anywhere from $9 to almost $17. And that really is because we see that kids that were in Head Start graduate from high school. Many of them go on to community colleges and four-year institutions. But most importantly, they give back to their communities. They have stable jobs, stable homes, and they really become citizens who are contributing to their communities every day.
So what is the status of Head Start? I know this is a program that was started, this came out of the Kennedy administration?
So this actually came out of the Johnson administration.
The Johnson administration, okay.
Yes.
So it was started by a Democratic administration. And I realize you're not here to be a partisan, but I have heard Republicans trashing Head Start my entire life and Democrats defending it. What's the status of it? Are the Republicans in Congress, or are there people in Congress, let's say, to make it nonpartisan, who are, trying to defund Head Start? Do you have the resources you need? What does the future look like?
Oh, well, you know, I think that the president is strongly committed to Head Start, and I think through his commitment over the last 3 years since the beginning of the administration, we've seen funding for Head Start increase. And, you know, actually, Head Start is one of those very unique programs that behind closed doors and when it comes to funding has great bipartisan support. You know, there's a Head Start program in everybody's backyard. And so I think that when folks think about what's going to happen if I don't provide these dollars, it's that kids in their own communities are going to be left out the door. You know, over the last 3 years, we've been able to increase services to 60,000 more kids and families across the country.
Wow. This is, you know, we tragically, the United States, in the among the 34 OECD nations, the wealthiest nations in the world, we have gone from being number one before the Reagan administration in terms of social mobility. Mm-hmm. In other words, you have the possibility of dying in a different class than the class into which you were born. We've gone from number one to now we're number three from the bottom, you know, so we're like number 30 or 31 or something like that in terms of social mobility.
Right.
And it seems like Head Start is one of those things that really provides for social mobility.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, I think that the data, the statistics show that Head Start is not just a program for children. It is really a two-generational program. It focuses on the children. It also focuses on the parents and the whole family so that we know that kids are not going to do well unless parents are doing well, unless families are doing well, and unless they have reached the goals that they've set. So we're really looking at serving the whole family and making sure everybody's getting the services that they need, whether it's education, medical, dental, or mom and dad want to go to school or want to go get a, you know, truck driving license or want to start their own little business.
Mm-hmm.
Head Start programs are there to support families as they make those transitions.
We're talking with Yvette Sanchez Fuentes, the National Director of the Office of Head Start in the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. Transition.acf.hhs.gov is the website. We will have that on our website. People can link to it. I'm curious, what can people who are watching or listening, what role can they play in helping further or sustain this extraordinary program, the Head Start program?
You know, I think what folks could really do at the local level is find out where your local Head Start program is. The beauty of Head Start programs is that it is serving the most vulnerable children and families in those communities, and it really does the work to bring communities together. So we're not just talking about the families that we're serving, but talking about how do we spread some of the knowledge and the resources that we have so that the community as a whole is lifted up and doing better. And so, you know, I think if folks are interested in finding out what's going on, just go down to your local Head Start program and see what kind of help they need in the classroom or mowing the lawn or building something or, you know, cooking a meal. But anything that folks can do is always helpful and appreciated. And you get to be with great kids all day. So what could be better?
It is great to hear that this program still has a significant volunteer component, because that, you know, this is such an important thing, and it knits the community together in many ways.
Absolutely. I think you mentioned the Johnson administration. The beauty of Head Start has always been that it is community-based. Mm-hmm. It's for the community. It's by the community. And it's parents and community members who make decisions about how their local Head Start program should be run and how it should be designed.
Hmm. So a local Head Start program in Texas or in a particular city in Texas might look very different than one in a particular city in Arkansas or Illinois or whatever. Not because of any demographic thing, but because the local people said, you know, we want to tweak it a little bit this way or that way.
Absolutely. The beauty of it, though, is that, you know, we do have a level of quality that we expect all Head Start programs to achieve. And so we hold programs accountable for reaching that level of quality, making sure that kids are getting the services that they need. But then they get to decide how they do that. How do I best meet the needs of my kids and my families?
And where does Head Start funding come from?
Head Start funding is direct. It's directly from the federal government through the Department of Health and Human Services. So we fund local organizations directly.
Okay. So our local Head Start programs, are they independent nonprofit programs that are funded by the government, or are they local programs of the government?
They could be nonprofits. They could be faith-based. They could be for-profits. We've got some universities. So if you are a public entity, you are eligible to apply for Head Start dollars.
Wow.
Yeah.
I'm impressed at the breadth of it, although I'm always wary of for-profit organizations. I just, you know, give you my bias here. I've been on the board of a nonprofit school for years and years and years, and I've seen a lot of for-profit things come and go. But, you know, sometimes, maybe. So that's extraordinary. That is broad. That's diverse. It's a great program. So get down and check out your local Head Start program. Anything else you want to let us know?
You know, I guess I would just, you know, remind folks that we know, and the research is telling us, and early brain research is telling us, that a strong early education leads to strong success in school and in life. And that's why President Obama and this administration is so committed to Head Start.
Yeah, and that's a fine thing. That's an absolutely fine and very, very important thing. So get down, check out your local Head Start program, participate with it. Director, National Director Yvette Sanchez Fuentes of the Office of Head Start, U.S. Department of Human Health and, Health and Human Services, HHS. Thank you so much, Director Fuentes, or Yvette.
Thank you, Tom. I appreciate the time.
Thank you very much for being with us. I appreciate the story and the info and the refresher on something that it's been a long time since I was directly involved with. Thank you.
Anytime, and go down to your local Head Start program.
You got it. Thank you. Bye now. It's 15 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
So Democratic Underground apparently started the ball rolling on this. Hey, have you noticed Romney's bronzed? And now the Washington Post picked it up. What's going on with that?
I'll show you just how cool scientists are. We study everything, that's why we're cool. And yes, most of us got high marks in school. And proud. Paleoanthropology.
Okay, this is our 2 minutes of science here for the week. Every Thursday I have 2 or 3 minutes for my geeky science. I'm just a science geek. What can I say? When I was 14 years old, I got the summer scholarship to Michigan State University, and the two things that we did were one was the effects of the mutagen colchicine upon Aspergillus niger and Rhizobus niger canis, two black bread molds, and the other was we took a single-celled plant, I'm forgetting the name of it, but it has a macroscopic, you can see the nucleus, and we tried to inject DNAs into there, pull the DNA out, and take DNA from another plant and put it in it, bring it back to life. We were unsuccessful. But, I mean, I was 14. That was, what, 1975? So, or 65. Yeah, 1965. So, long time ago. Anyhow, they could do that now. But that was fun. So many scientists think of the brain as the basic source for our moral instincts. The article, Why Mental Pictures Can Sway Your Moral Judgment, by Shankar Ventnam. And this is over at NPR, actually, was reporting this. And people do this cost-benefit analysis. This is actually from a study that was done by Joshua Green, a Harvard psychologist. And, you know, the question is, this trolley is heading toward 5 people. It's going to kill them. There's 2 ways you can stop the trolley. One is by pulling a switch, which, by the way, is going to cause someone to die. It'll divert it to another track, and it'll run over one person. You can pull the switch. The other is you can just shove a person out in front of the trolley who will die, but the 5 people will be saved. And what it turns out is that, you know, in my book, Cracking the Code, I talked about how some people are visual, some people are auditory, some people are kinesthetic, some people primarily process the world by making pictures. They remember things by pictures. Other people process the world through language, and they remember things in language. Other people process the world through their feelings. Well, they didn't get into the feelings, the kinesthetic folks. They just looked at visual and auditory. And what they found was that people who process the world in an auditory fashion are a little more logical, and they just see that either way, one person's going to die, 5 people are going to be saved. They're more likely to see it that way. Whereas the people who make pictures, they will almost always pull the switch rather than push the guy, because they can just imagine they're making a picture of pushing a guy in front of a train, and that's just a horrible thing. Who wants to imagine that? And so it's not that there's a difference in moral judgment. It's a difference in how we respond to these little games, these thought puzzles. And I just find it fascinating. The dilemmas, you know, that people who see these things visually are more likely to behave in a way than people who process them auditorily. It would have been fascinating to see the kinesthetics in there. Or the very, very, very tiny slice, the fraction of 1% of people who are gustatory or olfactory. And that's a whole other conversation. Anyhow, let's get back to the many topics of the day. My odd theory that Mitt Romney may think that he's divinely inspired to be president of the United States. Does that explain all of his behavior, his lack of issues and lacks of policy? Is it his willingness to just kind of go with whatever the flow is because he thinks that at any given moment he's being inspired by divine providence? That he's like, you know, he's the Polk administration, or what would be the Joseph Smith administration when the idea of divine intervention of the our right to take Texas and Oregon, the destiny of America was so real. Bruce in Stansbury Park, Utah. You're suggesting watching Russia's Free Speech TV on Dish Network. I'm great. You're suggesting that the White Horse prophecy isn't such a big deal. Do I have that right?
Well, Joseph Smith was a prolific writer. He never wrote that down anywhere, and it didn't come out until several years after his death. Someone said, oh, I was somewhere and heard him say this.
That's correct.
And then they wrote it down.
That's correct.
So,
and Brigham Young referenced it several times in writing.
Yeah, well, Brigham Young also said some things he said were as a prophet and some things he said was as a man. So you have to decide which he was, which hat he had on when he was saying that.
Sure. So I'm assuming you're a Mormon. I'm curious.
Yeah. And I know the White Horse prophecy, but
I'm curious if you think Mitt Romney thinks that he's...
The Constitution will be saved by someone from the mountains, not some Mormon.
Oh, okay. Do you think that Mitt Romney believes that he's been divinely guided or has been throughout his life and that his access to the presidency is part of that?
I think that he, I can't even imagine what he thinks. I think he feels like he should be the president because he's always gotten the things he wanted in life, right. You know, other than that, I won't go.
Yeah, that was my initial, for a long time, I've been thinking that. But now, reading this, I've read several articles. There's a great one in Salon about this. And then this interview with the head of his campaign, who was referred to the James Polk presidency. And, it makes me think that maybe he thinks that he got everything in his life very easily. Because, God or the gods were watching over him.
Yeah, well, I don't doubt that he, everyone knows, if you're Christian, you read the Bible, everyone who becomes a king because God wants them to be a king, and if Mitt Romney becomes president, it might, in his way of thinking, it might be because he feels God wants him to become the president.
Right.
But, we also know that we need to do some planning and know what we're going to do before we do it.
Would be a good idea. Would be a good idea. Bruce, thanks a lot for the call and for the insights and thoughts. I appreciate it. And for watching us on Free Speech TV there in Utah. 28 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back here on the Tom Hartman Program. A lot of the news today.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
And by the way, 81% of Republicans want democracy back. I'll explain right after this. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 81% of Republicans, 80% of Americans, which must mean that there's some who don't agree with this, but 81% of Republicans think that the amount of money that rich people can spend in elections should be limited by law. Like McCain-Feingold, it said you can give up to $2,000 and that's it. So it kind of levels the playing field. Now, there's a lot of people who can't afford $2,000, but if you're a billionaire or a multimillionaire like Mitt Romney, you can only spend $2,000. And that's what got knocked down. That law was, that part of that law was struck down by Antonin Scalia and his merry band on the Supreme Court in the Citizens United decision. 81% of Republicans. You know, that to me is actually an encouraging statistic. Pam in Falls Church, Virginia, watching at TomHartmann.com. Hey, Pam, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to agree with you about the Univision performance that it struck me when I saw it on TV this morning. The new tan, the spray tan or whatever it was for Romney. And he had one of his brunette sons, for what that's worth. But to me, it was very obvious. Also, I remembered a few days ago you had a young ex-Mormon caller that brought up the topic of how important the tithing and money and wealth in supporting the church is, and also their God's part of their covenants or beliefs. And I did some research as well myself, and I'd be the last one to, I'm very tolerant of our, you know, separation of church and state and religious freedom, but it just seems to me that that Romney's very strong religion is very pronounced, and that's fine and all, but I don't know if that's what motivates his achievement to the presidency and some of the things you've discussed earlier.
Yeah, increasingly it makes sense to me. I mean, I used to think that he was just trying to do what his dad didn't do, you know, that it was some sort of weird kind of
Bush Jr. or W with his dad. But
Yeah,
and for anybody to talk about people who are entitled to get weird here, but he and his and Ann do really seem like, you know, this is ours, and the way he talks, the way he's talked about his taxes, and I don't pay a penny more, and that's all you're going to get. It's with an authority that I really don't think any other president previously has had.
Right.
But I also want, in looking into, you know, he teases a lot in his weird peculiarities about, you know, in that speech that thank goodness James Carter IV, the grandson of Jimmy Carter, located at the Boca Raton fundraiser for May about he wished he were Mexican because he could have more voter support, ha-ha.
Right.
But, you know, he does have quite a few lingering relatives and cousins from his two great-grandparents who had plural marriages there. And I did some more checking what's already out there online. The Romney family and his mother's family were all over the very, you know, secular and moved around California and Detroit, and his father did missionary in Scotland and England, and so did Romney in France for 2 years and the sons. But I must say, it just seems ironic to me that we've heard so much about how Obama's background is so un-American and different, and he's not really American. But I've never really placed Romney recently either in Massachusetts or in Detroit, like we've had other candidates and people like Jimmy Carter, you know, Plains, Georgia.
Well, mostly I think he lives in his mansion or lived in his mansion in California, the one where they're putting the elevator in for his wife's Cadillac.
Yeah, and that, you know, it's well known that they work, they socialize within a very small circle of their family and friends. And I think most of the people who did the testimonials for him at the RNC convention were people from the Mormon Church, which is fine. But I'm just struck by, with all the exposure he's had to overseas, he makes comments about old England that doesn't produce anything anymore, and his heritage is England, English, and so is his mother's. And it just is, it's all very odd.
Yeah, it is. And sometimes it gets really, really fascinating. I don't want to, you know, I think we all need to be careful not to wander too far into the area of, you know, psychoanalysis or religion trashing. But I haven't been able to come up with an explanation for why a guy would run for president when he has no core values. And you know, 6 months ago, Rush Limbaugh was the one telling America that Romney had no core values. Of course, he's changed his tune now because he's just a Republican partisan. But this guy, you know, he has changed his position on virtually everything at least once, and in many cases two or three or four times. And that tells me that there is, I believe everybody has a core, you know, everybody has something that is animating them. And, you know, whether it's trying to prove that he's better than his dad or that he can succeed where his dad failed, or whether it's trying to fulfill the destiny of God, you know, of the destiny of your life. Actually, that latter explanation, particularly given these references to the Polk presidency, is starting to make more sense to me. Pam, thank you for the call. I need to move along, get some other folks in here. Kathy in Philadelphia. Hey, Kathy, thanks for listening to SiriusXM. What's up?
Hi, Tom. Thank you for taking my call. I honestly think they're just all megalomaniacs, all the Republicans. I mean, you have Bush W., who honestly thought he was inspired by God to run for president. I mean,
yeah.
I just think they think so highly of themselves.
Well, W. once said it's good to be king, you know?
Yeah, exactly. I just think it's their makeup. I mean, I know they're hiding behind their, or they're represented as a religion, but I just think it's their makeup.
Yeah, it's, you know, George W. Bush. I mean, so you think that it's the king thing. Here's George W. Bush. Listen to this.
If this were a dictatorship, it'd be a heck of a lot easier. Just so long as I'm the dictator.
Just so long as I'm the dictator.
You're absolutely, and just think that was his mentality. And most of them have that mentality. You listen to Rush Limbaugh, Palin, all of them. They all think they're better than us.
Yeah, it's remarkable. Kathy, thank you for the call. Malcolm in Park Forest, Illinois, listening to WCPT. We're now all 3 hours. Thank you very much for that. Hey, Malcolm, what's up?
How you doing?
Very cool.
Listen, I think a panel of psychiatrists that specialize in sociopathy could have a field day with Romney.
Mm.
I think this man possibly might be what you call a pure sociopath. I think he's almost totally devoid of empathy or any consideration for anyone outside of his own materialistic needs. He's a materialistic person. He has no empathy or sympathy for poor people or the elderly.
What is your
class people?
What is on what are you basing that? What's your evidence that he's lacking in the ability?
Comes off as a person who doesn't care about the people. He doesn't care about the core decent values of brotherhood and compassion for your fellow human man, concern for human society.
Yeah.
He's all about power and money and materialism, and I don't think he has enough ability to even cognize spirituality, let alone act it out in any sort of godlike way. I think a lot of people, he uses religion as a front, and people who are sociopathic like that and clever that way, they're very good at mimicking things that they want people to see and hear.
Yeah, well, and that's
not a nice guy,
Malcolm. That's a very, very harsh indictment. I'm sure you realize that, and you're right. Sociopaths, some of them put forward a very good face. I mean, even those who are like serial killers, you know,
right, that's
very
what
often they're so charming, you know, all that kind of
thing. This man is dangerous, and I pray to God he doesn't get, and I'm afraid.
But what if he's actually a decent guy at his core who actually just believes that everything has been organized by divine will, and that, you know, Jesus was right when he said the poor you will have with you always, and therefore it's not his job to worry about them, as he famously said, and that you know, the divine forces, you know, God or the gods or whatever, have decided that he should be president, and he was born to that purpose. He was the miracle baby. His mother told him that all his life. What if he's actually a decent person with his wife and his kids and his friends? He's a little more of an introvert than Bill Clinton, who's just a classic extrovert. He's not a competent politician.
You remember the guy here in Illinois that was going around sodomizing, murdering young men and hiding the bodies in the basement?
Yeah, I don't think he's doing that, you know?
You know, wonderful guy. So, you know, I'm going to answer your question this way. I'm going to quote Jesus. As a man thinketh in his heart, so is he, and by their fruits you shall know them. So whatever is really truly in a person's heart is going to be manifested outwardly as their fruits. And so,
right,
you know, the thing that he's done does not manifest compassion or brotherhood or anything.
You're talking about things like shutting down companies so that he can,
right,
you know, rob, rape, and pillage the pension funds.
I mean, he's dangerous, and I pray to God, I'm Catholic, I'm going to say a rosary every day that he doesn't get elected. Okay?
Wow. Wow. That's serious stuff. Malcolm.
All right, then.
Malcolm, you know, this is a tough one for me because, you know, calling somebody a sociopath, I will openly call George W. Bush a sociopath. And I think that there's ample evidence. And I think a lot of it tracks back to when he was 7 years old and his older sister died and his mother and father went golfing that day.
Mm-hmm.
And her name simply was never mentioned again. She simply vanished. And that's a bizarre. And then George W. started killing little animals and, you know, frogs and small things and torturing them. And, you know, that's like sociopathic behavior. And he delighted in war and torture. I think, George, you can build a strong case. But I'm not sure about Mitt Romney yet. But anyhow, Malcolm, thank you for your opinion. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
I think Bush actually got delight out of the waterboarding and torturing that was going on during his administration. And Cheney, too.
Every time I read the news, I'm always more confused. They're telling me to choose, but there's only lies to choose from. And how many died today?
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. This Talk Radio News Service report brought to you by the efforts to free America's newest political prisoner, former Alabama Governor Don Siegelman. You can sign the petition asking President Obama to pardon Don Siegelman at donsiegelman.org. Check it out. And Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service back from Sudan, where the skies just opened and poured on you, and you were sitting there with a cold that you picked up at the DNC.
And I was sitting there with a cold, and my tent got like 2 inches of rain, and it was the middle of the night. Oh, I was miserable.
Oh, my.
But here I am. And frankly, what also makes me miserable, unrelated to today's news, but really what is going on with the Arab Spring and the fact that, you know, we're kind of looked the other way with Bashir, and we've looked the other way with this one, because we
think the guy who runs Sudan
was somehow... This democracy is going to take over. And then I come back, and on the plane back, I am reading the fact that AID, the Agency for International Development, has just been asked to leave Russia by Mr. Putin. And I was there in either 93 or 94. I'm going to go look it up in a second. With Brian Atwood, who was then administrator of AID, showing how they're supporting all this democracy stuff going on. The courts, the this, the that. Do I believe in foreign aid? Absolutely. But I think we have to be realistic sometimes about what it can accomplish and what we really can do.
Yeah. Well, and AID has had over the years kind of a sketchy reputation because they've gotten a little too close to the CIA at times, particularly in some of these dictatorship countries.
Well, it is true. No one expected Russia to turn out to be that way, except historically it always has gone back to...
Well, we'll see. I think Russia is still a country that's in a tremendous state of flux right now.
I hope so. Now, speaking of things in a state of flux, Mr.
I think we're in a state of flux,
yes,
too.
Yes, well, we are. But Representative Todd Akin.
Speaking of the state of flux.
How's that for
you? I'm in an insane state of flux.
His son particularly went out off after the Republican establishment. He said, rather than swallowing their pride and admitting they were wrong not to help Todd Akin, bosses are doubling down, and they said they wanted to have their cake and eat it too. They wanted to appeal to the pro-life conservatives. Well, who else is going out there? As you know, Todd Akin hired Rick Tyler, who's been a long associate and campaign manager for Newt Gingrich. And now Rick Tyler is his campaign manager. And now the Newtster himself is going out to help Todd Akin at a $500 a plate dinner.
We should point out Todd Akin is the guy who said that women who are raped, genuinely, forcibly raped, his phrase or words to that effect, that their body produces some magic substance that prevents them from getting pregnant, which, of course, is total nonsense. Although apparently a number of Republicans believe this, and now, you know, New Mexico law actually has the phrase forcible rape in one of their laws.
It's just staggering. We ought to get my sister-in-law Valerie in on that one. Okay.
Yes.
President Obama has said that they will reject pro-coal legislation if it does not have environmental safeguards. This would prevent the Interior Department from issuing or approving any new rules that would lead to job loss in the coal industry. The prohibition would last at least until the end of next year. It's known as the Stop War on Coal Act. It's probably...
Does this mean the coal industry is helping fund the Obama campaign?
No. I mean, it means the coal... Well, in some respects, they are, because so many people are saying, what?
Yeah, he said clean coal at the DNC.
Yeah, he did say clean coal, but anyway. Today is the anniversary of the end of Don't Ask, Don't Tell.
Yeah,
and,
1 year.
And the president talked about that and how successfully
has John McCain come out and apologized yet?
No, but you do know that General Jones, the Marine general, actually said he was wrong. That he said about 4 or 6 months ago or whatever.
Wow.
But no, we have not heard a thing. Nor has Romney. And I got into a huge argument with Governor Romney in 2007. I have to find the interview.
Well, that was before the Etch-a-Sketch.
Oh, that was before the... right, but exactly that same issue.
But he was arguing that we shouldn't allow gays to openly serve in the military.
That's right,
Governor Romney,
that's
in 2007.
Right. That's right.
I wonder where he stands on the issue now. Has he spoken of it?
Of course not. My guess is that will come up at the debates.
In the debates, yeah, certainly.
And the first debate is right around the corner, October 3rd, Wednesday, October 3rd.
Right. That's
in Colorado.
Two weeks from yesterday. Is that
I
right?
guess so.
If I'm remembering right.
We're into debate
right.
season.
Yeah. Oh, my. It's going to start getting really interesting.
It certainly is. Also, House Armed Services Committee, Defense Department Controller Robert Hale said there's no legislative tweak that can stop the sequestration. They must change it completely. This is the percentage that has to be cut automatically if they could not agree on $1.5 billion worth of cuts.
Well, they will. They will.
They probably will
a week or two after the first of the year.
Right.
In fact, not just after the election. I think they're going to wait until after the first of the year. The sequestration will happen, but it won't actually happen.
Well,
because
they'll mess around money. I mean,
yeah,
it's like
they'll pass
they
legislation
right.
retroactively.
Right. Know. And they do that all the time, just like a lot of the Bush tax cuts, I think, are going to be revived.
Yeah. Ooh. Well, the certainly ones for the middle class. Yeah.
Right. But I do think that some actually will. Also, the Inspector General of the Justice Department was defending his Fast and Furious report. Seems like a very cool guy. But what's so fascinating about that is both the FBI and the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms have exactly two different systems for oversight, even though they're both under the Justice Department. And one of the things that came out in the hearings today was that there needs to not be two different systems.
Yeah, but one of the things that came out in the report yesterday was that Eric Holder is not the villain that Daryl Issa is trying to make him out to.
And all Congress was saying today, Daryl Issa was saying, well, no, we weren't angry. We weren't saying that he was responsible. We were only saying that he should have let us have more of these reports. Well, that's not what they were saying.
Oh, no. Daryl Issa was doing everything he could to vilify the first African-American attorney general of the United States. Although, you know, Louise argues, hey, it's just because he was a Democrat. They impeached Clinton, too.
Right.
So it may well be that. I'm reading more into it than it's there.
Double trouble.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyhow, Alan Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service. Our Talk Radio News Service report brought to you by the efforts to free Governor Don Siegelman, donsiegelman.org. Thank you, Ellen.
Thank you.
We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. This is amazing. You know, Scott Brown has been trying to avoid debating Elizabeth Warren because everybody will figure out if he does that he's a Republican shill. He's trying to pretend he's not. He's trying to say, oh, I'm a moderate. He doesn't, you know, it doesn't say Republican on any of his signs or most of his websites. But, you know, the fact of the matter is, if Scott Brown's in the Senate, that's one more Republican vote. And if it's more than 50, that means the Republicans control the Senate, which is like kind of the end of America as we know it. So Scott Brown was saying, oh, I can't debate Elizabeth Warren tonight. I'm sorry. I know we were kind of planning on it, but I got to vote. You know, the Senate's in session. So Harry Reid just canceled the session tonight and said, Harry Reid said, if the reports coming out of the Hill publication are correct, said Scott Brown has no excuse now to debate Elizabeth Warren. So those of you in Massachusetts, I mean, this is a big deal for you. Anybody all around the country, ElizabethWarren.com is her website, and it's certainly worth checking out. genetically modified organisms. A new study out of France found that GMO foods produced specifically by Monsanto caused cancers and kidney diseases in rats. And therefore, France, most of Europe has banned Monsanto genetically modified foods, the Frankenfoods, except for one of their kinds of corn. France has even banned the corn now and just said, that's it, screw it. We're not going to go with this whole, genetically modified stuff. We like the old-fashioned way, nature. Daryl Issa has not yet apologized to Attorney General Holder. The Koch brothers and Dick Armey, the multimillionaire lobbyist here on K Street in Washington, D.C., who runs, or who was the founder, I guess, of Freedom Works. Is it Freedom Works? No, it was Americans for Prosperity. Thank you, Paul. Americans for Prosperity. They are, according to their New Jersey State Director, Steve Longan, they're holding a rally today in New York to push back against the Occupy Wall Street movement. Right. And there's a new report out from the Bank of International Settlements. Now, the Bank of International Settlements is like the international bank of banks, right? And they did a study of U.S. banks, and they said that the banksters who got the $14 trillion bailout, are back to the same old gambling trick. Here's the quote. During the crisis, rescued banks did not reduce the riskiness of their new syndicated lending compared to their non-rescued peers. In fact, our results suggest that the relative riskiness of their lending increased. Six banks own more wealth than 60-5 or 70%, something close to this, in the 60%, over 60% of the entire GDP of the United States. If you don't think that's insane, I mean, this is why the banksters are going after Sherrod Brown. You go to SherrodBrown.com, you can read about it. He tried to break up the six big banks, and so they're throwing millions of dollars into Josh Mandel's campaign, the Republican, this kid who's running against Sherrod Brown. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. 866-987-THOM is our telephone number. That's 8466. By the way. And Russell in Atlanta, Georgia, you have some thoughts on the White Horse prophecy, Russell?
Yes, I do, Tom. Thanks for having me on the phone here. I've been listening to what people have been talking about this and how you're relating it to Mitt Romney and everything like that. And I think one of the things that
I want to say I'm speculating here. I'm not okay. Asserting.
Okay. Well, one of the things that people seem to be missing about the White Horse Prophecy is its relationship to how the Mormon Church plans to create this new Jerusalem and build the city of Zion. And all of that ties into the overthrow of the American government and all kinds of fun stuff like that.
Overthrow or simply we have a Mormon as president?
Well, they actually used the term to overcome the government of our land.
Huh.
And so I know that this probably isn't the place to get into it right about now, but there has always been, since the time of Joseph Smith, a plan to, in his words, capture the presidency of the United States, because the Mormons have always considered that to be their highest aim in the church.
Right. He ran for president. Joseph Smith, the prophet, the founder of the Mormon Church, ran for president against James Polk and was murdered by a mob before the election. So we don't know how many votes he would have gotten, but he tried.
Exactly.
In the election of 1844.
So yes, that's absolutely true.
Yeah, this is where the thing for me was when, the reporter from Politico asked the guy who is the chairperson of Romney's campaign, a question about the campaign. Let me get the exact quote here so I'm not mischaracterizing it. Hang on just a second. It's here we go. His name is Mike Allen from Politico, wrote the story. And Matt Rhodes was the campaign manager for the Romney campaign. And Mike Allen writes, and I'm quoting Mike Allen here, "When I asked Rhodes what Romney might do with the budget and entitlement reform plans Ryan has already outlined, Rhodes' eyes lit up. He gave me a name, James Polk. Rhodes and the rest of the members of Romney's inner circle think a Romney presidency could look much like the White House tenure of the 11th U.S. president. And end of quote. And James Polk, of course, is the guy who came up with the concept of manifest destiny, or at least promoted it as the excuse to invade Texas and what was then Mexico and have the Mexican-American War, much to the chagrin of Abraham Lincoln, who was very opposed to it. And James Polk is the guy against whom Joseph Smith ran for president. So seems to me, kind of like, two plus two. Russell, thank you for your call and thank you for your thoughts. Teresa in Libertyville, Illinois, listening on WCPT. Hey, Teresa, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Listen, I heard, just a sweet memory. I heard your caller earlier from Park Forest. I grew up in Park Forest, Illinois. And I was seven years old, and my father was intellectually curious about religion. So we joined the Mormon Church up in Church of Latter-day Saints in Olympia Fields. And then 2 years later, in 1970, my father left my mother with three kids.
Ouch.
And abandoned us and went back to North Carolina. Bless his soul. He passed away earlier this year. But my mom went to the church thinking I can turn back to them for guidance and help. And, just a woman in shock and with three children.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, well, go get your husband. And Renata, my mother said, no, I'm not going to get him. He had a girlfriend, and he drank, and he worked. But nevertheless, just abused the family, and that emotionally we were all abused. And they said, well, go get him, or, you're out of the church. So we were pretty much told not to come back to church anymore.
Because it's a patriarchal religion. You've got to have, if in a patriarchy, you have to have a father?
Yeah. So we didn't go. So my mother wouldn't go after a man who, deceived and left her family, and that
right.
was it.
Yeah. Well, there are,
that,
there,
now,
there are not women. Women just now. This isn't unique to the Mormon Church. I mean, there's not a woman pope either, and in some of the Protestant religions, you don't have women priests. Although some of them are starting to allow that, but certainly it doesn't happen in Mormonism. A woman has to be there for the man. It's the man is the one who becomes the god.
Now, how dare she defy him and not want him and not go after somebody? But then it always concerns me, having all that money and him leaving so much money, to the Mormon Church and being surrounded by all these yes men, and the emperor has no clothes.
So you're, what you got out of that is that the emperor has no clothes. The Mitt Romney is. Well, that's interesting. Very interesting. Teresa, thank you for the call. And I'm sorry to hear about your experience, but it sounds like you've learned a lot from it. And that's probably a good thing. Thank you, Teresa. We'll be back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Could it be that prophecy is actually about to be fulfilled in America? Funny, during the gig last night, Democratic Underground has really started this. They've got a great photo on the front page of Mitt Romney looking so tan, and at the Univision thing, and the guy's saying heck of a tan, Brownie, right? But last night during the event, Huffington Post style, one of the editors over at the Huffington Post style page tweeted out, it looks like Romney, words to the effect of, it looks like Romney has cornered the market on 47% of the spray tan products in America. It's very strange. Very strange. On the other hand, he might have just been trying to look good and healthy. Who knows? I do think, though, that there's a certain amount of pandering. One of his sons that he chose to speak was the one who had the darkest complexion, when I saw him on TV, I thought, is that young man Hispanic? Oh, it's one of Romney's sons. Oh, interesting. John in Las Cruces, New Mexico. Hey, John, thanks for watching Free Speech TV on Dish Network. What's up?
Hey, Tom, I just wanted to point out to you that I just got out of grad school here at New Mexico State University, and it seems to me that if every time I wanted to take an action as a politician or a citizen, And I simply have to, I simply had to say it was divinely inspired that I do this.
Mm-hmm.
I would have to take absolutely no responsibility for any of my actions at any given time.
Well, that's my point. You know, Romney will not tell us what he intends to do as president. And when he was with his group of donors, at least with regard to the Middle East, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, he said he's not going to do anything. He's just going to sit back and see what happens. And at first I thought, holy cow, that's incredibly irresponsible. But now I'm thinking that the subtext to that, you know, what he's really thinking deep down inside is God is going to guide everything. I am God's instrument. I don't know how it's going to work out. So I'm just going to go day by day and do what God tells me to do, or deal with what God presents me or puts in front of me, or words to that effect. I'm not sure that as a Mormon he would say God, because, you know, every man can become a god in the Mormon religion, but and the God who created the world that we live in, who started out as a man someplace else on some other planet, I guess. But you get the point.
It reminds me of George W. Bush, and a lot of people ended up dead when that happened, when he started citing God as one of his motivating factors for war.
Yeah.
Hundreds of thousands of people, at least the Iraqis, weren't too happy with that.
Well, I think Bush was just rationalizing. I suspect that Romney actually believes this, and it comes out of his mother, you know, having been told by her doctor that she couldn't have him as a son, that he was the fourth son, and that it wasn't possible. And, of course, in Mormon religion, the more kids you have, the more, you know, his dad, George, would get higher up in the godlike hierarchy in the afterlife. And so he... you know, he was a gift from God. He was divine to begin with, and everything always came to him. It was like magic. You know, everything he touched turned to gold. So, you know, he thinks that. In my opinion, I'm playing with this. We'll see where this goes. But John, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. June in Westcott, Wisconsin. Hey, June, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I missed you, and I'm glad you're better.
Thank you.
My point of view is this. I have a friend who's a PhD psychologist, and there is a disease called borderline.
Borderline personality disorder, yes.
Right. And the main characteristic of this disease is lack of empathy. And I don't like to think of anyone that's a sociopath.
Yeah.
Because he does do things for his church and people of that ilk. But it is a sign of a man who is at sorts, not knowing what to say or what to think,
mm-hmm.
and not being able to reach into his moral core, which was well described by The Economist in their view of Romney, first time they ever not, you know, supported a Republican.
Yeah.
And I that's my feeling about him. It could be true, couldn't be, but we're throwing out ideas here.
Right. Yeah, John Kenneth Galbraith said, the modern conservative is engaged in one of man's oldest exercises in moral philosophy, the search for superior moral justification for selfishness. I mean, there might be a piece of that. Looking at Romney, I wouldn't use borderline personality disorder, because those are people who define themselves by typically one other person, and they tend to love and then hate, and there's some very clear characteristics. But maybe narcissistic personality disorder, mild sociopathy, or maybe he just is a decent guy who believes that, you know, God put him on this earth to become president of the United States and is going to guide him through his presidency. Do you think it's possible?
I don't know that much about the Mormon religion, just what I learned in history, and that's usually prejudiced.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you very much, June, for the call. Scott in Woodinville, Washington. Hey, Scott. Thanks for listening to Talk 1090. What's up?
Hey, Tom. God bless you.
Well, thank you. I'll take all the blessings I can get.
Yes, yes. We all do. When you were talking about Romney and your theory, a word came to me, and that was hubris.
Hmm.
And I, you know, it's a word I use, but sometimes I don't know the exact meaning. So I looked it up, and it said hubris often indicates a loss of contact with reality,
mm-hmm.
and an overestimation of one's own competence or capabilities.
Right.
Especially when the person exhibiting it is in a position of power.
One of the books about the Bush administration had the word hubris in its title. We interviewed the author on this show maybe 4 years ago or so. I think that that's a great, it's certainly a great definition for George W. Bush. You think that Romney, you think that defines him too?
Well, I do, you know, and it's interesting because that comes from the Greek.
Mm-hmm.
And in ancient Greek, it says the hubris referred to actions that shamed and humiliated the victim for the pleasure or gratification of the abuser. And when I read that, what came to me was the case, the reported assault of a classmate in his prep school.
Oh, yeah.
When
he brought the kid down
and tackled him and cut his hair off.
Right. Or it could be the outing of Valerie Plame by Dick Cheney and the Bush administration. Yeah, interesting. Thank you, Scott.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 866-987-THOM.
Did that behavior of Mitt Romney's as he was a young person, is that why he could so easily destroy people's pensions as an adult? It's the good, the bad, and the very, very vertiginously ugly. The good. The Broward County Public Schools. The Broward County, Florida School Board voted yesterday to officially recognize October as LGBT History Month, becoming the first public school district in the country to do so. The ruling allows teachers to create a curriculum based on LGBT history, which may have been otherwise overlooked. At the ruling, school board member Robin Bartleman said that every child deserves to feel safe, not just in their school, but in their own skin. This ruling in Florida is a huge step in promoting LGBT equality and stopping the bullying and hazing that so many LGBT students face at schools all across America every day. Hopefully more school districts across the nation will follow in Broward County's steps. The bad. Texas Governor Rick Perry. In a conference call with evangelicals Tuesday as part of the 40 Days to Save America religious campaign, Perry told those on the call that President Obama is engaged in, quote, spiritual warfare, end quote, and is, quote, trying to remove any trace of religion from American life, and that his message is inspired by Satan himself. Perry then called on Christian warriors and Christian soldiers to stand our ground against the president. While religious freedom is an essential part of America, Governor Perry's choice of words, like warriors and soldiers and warfare, is poor at the very least, if not downright dangerous. And the very, very ugly, Bud Johnson. Johnson, a Texas resident, hung a chair from a tree in his front yard as an effigy of President Obama, playing off of Clint Eastwood's RNC speech. Johnson also tied an American flag to the chair to make sure his point was clear. When asked about the hateful and outrageous act, Johnson said, I don't really give a damn whether it disturbs you or not. You can take your concerns and go straight to hell and take Obama with you. I don't give an expletive. If you don't like it, don't come down my street. Well, all Americans have the right to free speech, but an appalling image like the one Mr. Johnson chose to display has no place in our society and is very, very ugly. Or at least no place in a civil society. We'll see. Okay, David in Portland, Oregon. You say Romney is no James K. Polk, really?
Yeah, well, I'm kind of a history buff, Tom. By the way, I love your show. I've been a listener forever. I'm over here in Portland, not far from your houseboat, I think.
Uh-huh.
But anyway, the thing about Polk was that he had a very specific plan about what he wanted to do, and he had totally publicized exactly what he wanted to do, which was, I think, to settle the Oregon question with Great Britain, and then they had the
right.
War with Mexico, which sidetracked that, but he did the war very quickly, very efficiently, and he pledged to one single term, and he was an extremely hard worker. I mean, just the opposite of what it sounds like Romney's all about.
Right. But he did come up with a concept of, basically America being divinely guided, that we had the right to take these lands because it was God's will.
Well, I think it was more
manifest destiny was the phrase that was popular at the time.
Yeah, I'm not so sure it was originated with him as much as, you know, the Monroe Doctrine.
Oh, manifest destiny goes back to the founding of the country. In fact, it goes back 100 years before the founding of the country.
Yeah, it's more like the 1820s rather than the 1840s when Polk was around.
Oh, I would say it goes back to the 1600s. But nonetheless, Polk was a big advocate of that.
Well, he went along with it. And he really had control of the foreign policy going on in Texas, which was, 1,500 miles away from Washington. And
right.
In those days, they didn't have fax machines or
yeah.
Internet
yeah.
or anything else.
Yeah. So in essence, your point, David, is that Romney's no James K. Polk, because Polk was actually a hardworking guy who made the commitment to one term, kept that commitment, and did what he said he was going to do.
Yeah, he got everything done that he wanted to do, and he was very specific about what he was going to do prior to his coming into office, too.
Fascinating. David, thank you for the info and for the history lesson. I appreciate it. And thanks for listening to KPOJ. Craig in Vancouver, Washington, listening to Talk 1090. Hey, Greg, what's up?
How's it going, Tom?
Great. If you're in Vancouver, you're listening to KPOJ, right?
No, I stream 1090 on my TuneIn app.
Ah, okay. Great. So what's on your mind?
There's a story to that, and we won't get into it. But,
okay.
I happened to come across the movie Banking on Heaven. Have you seen it?
I have not.
It's a documentary about the Warren Jeffs cult over there off the Arizona-Utah border.
Oh, I've seen a number of small documentaries about Warren Jeffs. CNN was really into that a couple of years back and whatnot. But so maybe I've seen it and just don't know it. But in any case, your point.
They snuck cameras in, and every religion has its extremists. But
yeah.
I got confused about what was Tea Party mantra and what was the fundamentalist Mormon cult mantra with respect to, how they viewed African American and women and girls in a family were more prized than boys because girls could reproduce. And,
right.
And this was all part of the prophetal hierarchy.
Well, and periodically they actually had to get rid of the boys. They take a bunch of the teenage boys and dump them in town.
Dump them off into a town, yeah. It's amazing, yeah.
But that's not mainstream Mormonism. I mean, that's any more than the Anabaptist cults, where they don't allow medicine and their kids die of things like, pneumonia because they won't take antibiotics that represent mainstream Protestantism.
I mean, right. I wonder how much Romney is having to struggle with appeasing the extremists and the Tea Party that would rather go along this path of subserviency and his own faith. And if that's where he gets caught in the middle of all this that he can't actually articulate.
Yeah, well, I'm sure.
Where he is.
And my personal guess is that when he was a moderate governor of Massachusetts and brought, Obamacare to Massachusetts, that was probably closer to his core convictions, politically speaking, than what he's doing now. And that's why he looks so uncomfortable. He's not comfortable in his own skin, which when he goes on Hispanic TV, he seems to bronze. Huffington Post has now got two examples. The one was Monday, September 17th, when he addressed the Los Angeles Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. He had super tanned his face. And then the other was last night on Univision. It's very, very odd. Anyhow, Craig, thanks for the call. Well said. Ron in Spokane, Washington. You are a Mormon. You want to correct me?
Well, first, let me just tell you how much I appreciate you, Tom. You're kind of the voice of sanity
occasionally.
On television.
Okay.
But no, I'm being a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Let me first tell you that I've never felt pressure from anybody to vote for Mitt Romney.
Okay.
In fact, I think they're shocked when they come to my house and they see a sign for Obama in my front yard.
Mm-hmm.
But when you talk about this white horse, to save
prophecy,
church or save the United States, it's more for what I've been taught all my life is that the Constitution will get the corruption will be so bad in our politics that the Constitution will falter.
Right.
And the only way the Constitution will be saved is through the members of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.
Right.
So the men who hold the priesthood will run in their respective districts and take over either the Senate or the Congress, and then being that they will not be able to be manipulated by outside money through banksters or the Koch brothers or whoever, that they'll vote exactly the way they're supposed to vote to save the Constitution.
Right.
I mean, you look at the Mormon Church, what they do with the Bishop's Storehouse. They they store vast amounts of foods and generators and blankets and stuff. If there's a natural disaster anywhere, they help everybody. They don't just help just the members of their own church.
I understand that.
And they do all this for the bishops and the stake presidents and all that. They do for free. They don't accept a salary unless they become a full-time, you know, position in the church, like the prophet or the 12 apostles or folks. And they only get a small salary. It's not much.
I understand that too. And I respect that. I would not, if somebody wants to adopt a religion, I would not, say, holy cow, don't do that. You know, don't become a or anything like that. I mean, I'm not trying to trash Mormonism. I'm trying to understand Mitt Romney's desire to be president of the United States and how that conflicts with the fact that past people who wanted to be presidents of the United States said, here is my plan. Bill Clinton had his 34-point plan, you know. And here's what I'm going to do. He ran on this thing called the New Covenant, and it had all these very specific things in it. And he laid them right out.
And why I'm not voting for him.
Yeah, and Nixon did the same thing, and LBJ did the same thing, and Jack Kennedy. I mean, every president in my lifetime that I can remember laid out what they were going to do. Romney refuses to do that. And
exactly.
I think it's because he is in this bizarre world where the wackadoodles have taken over the Republican Party and he's the Republican nominee and he's not comfortable with the wackadoodles. Or,
well, I think it's more because he's in love with his money.
Well, it could be.
I mean
that's a little grimmer view of him. I'm beginning to think maybe he thinks that he's being divinely guided and has been his whole entire life and this is just his destiny.
Well, I really don't think that with the way the situation of our Congress and our Senate is, with the amount of money that's the outside influence that's there, that anybody will ever be able to, one person and president-wise, will be able to make much of a difference.
Well, you never know. I mean, Harry Reid's a Mormon, too, and he's the head of the Senate. And
yeah, that's one of the guys that I look up to.
Yeah, I like Harry Reid. I totally respect Harry Reid. And like I said, I'm not here to bash Mormonism. I'm just trying to figure out who this guy Mitt Romney is, because I think that there's a lot of people on the right who are, you know, conservatives and Republicans who are trying to figure out who he is too and what motivates him, and I'm just tossing this out as one possibility. Ron, thank you for the call and the correction.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
Who is this guy Mitt Romney? What does he believe? Why does he want to be president of the United States? Or is it being thrust upon him?
From the war against disorder, from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay, democracy is coming to the USA.
You tell him, Leonard James in Vero Beach, Florida. Hey, Leonard, what's on your mind?
Leonard?
Oh, I'm sorry, James.
Yeah, you got it that time, Tom. We've talked a couple times before. You're pretty astute in political history, at least currently, like in our lifetime.
Mm-hmm.
Would you mind if I asked you a couple of short questions?
Okay.
Okay, well, during the Reagan-Carter campaign in 1980, I remember there being rumors, or even more than rumors, that H.W. Bush met in Paris with Iranian officials.
Right.
And made an agreement to hold the hostages until after the election.
Yeah, it looks like it was actually Bill Casey who did that.
But pretty much true knowledge.
Yeah, and in fact, Barbara Honegger, who worked in the Bush administration, or in the Reagan administration, the back cover of her book is a picture of her with Reagan on one side and George W. or Herbert Walker on the other, you know, holding, you know, with their arms around her. And Barbara Honegger wrote a book called October Surprise, which is out of print, but is you can find used copies quite easily. And she points out that it was Bill Casey who went to Paris for that meeting, that he was the campaign manager of the Reagan-Bush campaign, and that Reagan paid him for that by making him director of the CIA, and that when the Iran-Contra investigation in Congress reached the point where they were going to ask for Casey's testimony, that Bill Casey told his attorney, Milton Gould, I believe his name was, that he was going to fully testify as to what he had done in Paris. And the day that he was supposed to testify before Congress, he was sitting in his office at the directorate of the CIA, and he suddenly had a seizure and fell on the floor convulsing. They took him off to Bethesda Naval Hospital, opened up his brain, and cut out the part of his brain, the left parietal region, Broca's region of the brain that controls speech. They literally rendered him speechless. And then he died several weeks or maybe a few months later as a consequence of that.
I'm sure it was all coincidence.
Yeah, absolutely, of course. Yes.
Okay. The other question concerning the Kennedy assassination.
Sir.
Did you have any information that prior to the assassination that Johnson was indictable as vice president for a murder that occurred in Texas?
Yes. In fact, there's a book called A Texan Looks at Lyndon that was published in the 60s during the Kennedy administration, when Johnson was vice president, that talked about how when LBJ was a school teacher and was running for his first, I think it was the Texas legislature, wasn't it? The Texas House of Representatives.
That I'm not sure
that
about.
The guy he was running against was killed, and there was a lot of speculation that Lyndon had something to do with that. They never, you know, it was like one of these unsolved murders. And I read the book back then, you know, when I was young, and so I'm telling you from a long time ago memory.
Yeah.
And I have no idea if what that book was asserting was the truth or if it was just some rumor or what. But yeah, that was in the air. That was certainly in the air. But I don't think Lyndon Johnson had anything to do with killing John Kennedy.
The story I heard about that, and it's similar in some ways, but supposedly there was a silo being paid for by the USDA, and an agent went down there and inspected, and it was non-existent.
Well, Lady Bird had a bunch of funky businesses. I mean, you know, she invested in part of one, you know, an airfield in Vietnam. Her construction company was, you know, got the contract for that. There, the LBJ, you know, was. In some ways he was a really genuinely great president. And in some ways, whether it was the times or whether it was, you know, he was following Nixon's example or what, I don't know. But, you know, I think when Kennedy died, some of the moral compass of that administration, some of it got acquired really aggressively because Bobby was still around, and some of it was lost.
Yeah.
But, you know, hey, we're all people here. And that's why, you know, I mean, everybody has the skeletons in their closet. And that's why I'm trying to figure out who is Mitt Romney in a way that doesn't just, you know, put him in a little box like, oh, he's a sociopath. But, you know, why is he running for president? Who is this guy? Where is he trying to go? And so, anyhow, let me get on with that. James, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. John in Watertown, Mass. Hey, John, what's up?
Hi, Dom. Thank you for taking my call. I'm just curious about what you believe Romney was talking about when he is saying things about the Palestine-Israel connection.
Right.
And do you think that maybe he would like a trip to Gaza Strip because I'll pay for it?
I think he should take one. I definitely think anybody running for national political office should take one. They should visit both Israel and Palestine. And see both of them and see the situation in both.
Why do you think that he has this idea that the Palestinian people have no interest in peace with Israel? I mean, the Israelis are actually occupying the whole area. They're building settlements all the time. There's no stopping them. Obama doesn't agree with that, but he says nothing about it. What do you think?
Well, I think it's a very difficult and complicated situation, and that the Palestinians are getting screwed by and large, but the Israelis have a long history of being bombed and killed, and they're very nervous about that. Here's my concern about this. This whole issue of peace with Palestine and what the future should be and all that, this is a very loud debate in Israel. The Israelis themselves are debating this. You know, Netanyahu and the kind of hawkish party that he represents is actually a minority in Israel. It's just that he's been able to put together a coalition for governing. Read Haaretz, you know, the online newspaper, haaretz.com, I believe it is. And you get this. I mean, you go to Israel and you get it. There's this very loud, very open, very incredibly honest, high-integrity debate in Israel about Israeli foreign policy and Israeli domestic policy with regard to the Palestinian people. That debate is not allowed here in the United States. You try to have that debate, and boy, you get nailed with you know, hate mail and everything else. It's just it's insane. And I think that we need to have that debate in this country. We need more discussion of that, but we don't have it. John, thank you for the call. Thanks for watching Free Speech TV on Dish Network, or on DirecTV, rather. coming up tomorrow on the Tom Hartman program. It's Friday, and that means it's Brunch with Bernie, America's senator, in my opinion. Senator Bernie Sanders is going to be here talking about the important issues of the week and taking your calls to in our national town hall meeting. And don't forget, democracy begins when you show up. Not a spectator sport. Voting ain't enough. Participate. Tag your it.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, go to tomhartman.com.